I want to start out my presentation by stating concisely my position on this matter. There is no such thing as the six stages of evolution. They're just not a thing. Now, we have science to explain each one of the things that Kent is saying that we don't. These are the Big Bang Theory, various nucleosyntheses, observed star formation, the scientific method itself, and the theory of evolution, and the theory of evolution again. Those are the actual science behind those six different stages that Kent has made up. So as you can see, only the last two are the theory of evolution. The first four are just straight up not evolution at all. These are not stages of evolution. These are just different scientific theories. So the question then becomes, why would Kent create this obviously false straw man of evolution that nobody teaches? No evolutionary biologist or physicist or any scientist of any kind would agree to this idea of evolution having these six stages. So why is it that Kent created and popularized this idea? I think that there are several parallels with Scientologists and psychiatry. Here are some. Scientologists reject the science of psychiatry and propose a supernatural alternative. Scientologists blame psychiatry for 20th century wars, 9/11, and the Holocaust. That's true, surprisingly enough. They think it's the psychiatrists at fault. And L. Ron Hubbard even claimed that psychiatrists were behind a global conspiracy to hide the truth of Scientology to establish a Marxist one-world government. Hubbard viewed Scientology as the superior alternative to psychiatry, which he viewed as a dangerous rival religion. Now, obviously, on the other hand, the parallels are obvious. Kent Hovind rejects the science of evolution and proposes a supernatural alternative. Kent Hovind blames evolution for 20th century wars and even the Holocaust. I went to Dinosaur Adventureland myself. I saw the signs that are posted everywhere talking about how Hitler was inspired by evolution to do the Holocaust. It's an almost perfect parallel. Hovind claims that evolutionists are behind a global conspiracy to hide the truth of God. That's why they want to propagate this idea of evolution, because it's supposed to lead people away from the truth of young earth creationism, God's word. And they want to, he thinks, establish or have already established, I don't know, a one world Marxist government. He talks about the Marxist communist evolutionists a lot. That Kent Hovind views young earth creationism as the superior alternative to evolution, which he views as a dangerous rival religion. Kent is always saying evolution's a religion, as if religion is some sort of insult, and says, you know, evolution is a dangerous, a dumb cult. I mean, you already heard it here tonight. So I don't think it's going overboard to say that, you know, Kent is obviously pushing a cult ideology where he's portraying these six stages of evolution, which are just patently a straw man and not true. So what does the actual evidence show? On one hand, we have the six stages of evolution in quotation marks, obviously, versus the 6 days of creation. As I think it's obvious why Kent wanted evolution to have six stages of creation to make a parallel to mirror as the 6 days of creation. So let's see what the evidence shows. So here we have the Big Bang on one hand, which you can see the evidence clearly demonstrates. This is just one example of such, the CMB temperature power spectrum, which clearly demonstrates that the universe began 13.7 billion years ago. You can see it precisely in the data, versus a bunch of lines on paper. It just says, let there be light, without any supporting citations or empirical evidence at all. You just have to take the word for it. Similar to chemical evolution, on the one hand, we have nucleosynthesis, like this actual empirically observed data from spectroscopy showing that metallicity, the amount of heavy elements, decreases with higher redshift. Wow, shocker. It's exactly like the Big Bang predicts for nucleosynthesis in stars. Then the other hand, we have day two of creation where God creates the firmament, which is a literal dome over the flat earth. I mean, the biblical cosmology is obviously flat earth. It was written before we discovered the earth was round in ancient Greece, like of Eratosthenes. So the Old Testament is clearly a flat earth text. It even describes the earth as having ends. There are ends to the earth. There are like over 200 Bible verses that point to a flat earth description in the Bible. Then we have stellar evolution. On the one hand, we have observed star formation. Here is an HD picture taken by the James Webb Space Telescope of a star being formed. I mean, Kent said no one's ever observed this. Here it is in high definition. And you can even see the planet protoplanetary accretion disk around it where new planets are forming. We've literally taken pictures of the process happening. Meanwhile, you have on the third day over here, let the earth bring forth grass. So over in the Bible version, we've got grass before we've got stars. Then we've got organic evolution, which is actually the part of this where there is no scientific consensus theory. You just have a series of competing hypotheses. But again, this scientific method is the best track record of discovering truth about the objective reality. So I'm going to go with the scientific method, which is natural law. Methodologically naturalistic. So that would be abiogenesis. The track record obviously supports, if you're a betting man, which of these you're gonna go with, right? Abiogenesis or dividing the firmament up. Then finally, we have macroevolution with the actual theory of evolution on the left, supported by phylogenetics, population genetics, fossil record, paleontology, biogeography, developmental biology, embryology, all manners of different sciences. Here's the evidence that I brought forward tonight, which we could talk about if we have time for. Meanwhile, on the other hand, you have just God using magic to just create, spontaneously create all these creatures, which doesn't explain at all the order of the fossil record that we see clearly reflects evolutionary changes over time and not a global flood. These things are not arranged according to density, mobility, intelligence, body plan, habitat, or anything that Kent Hovind says. It's like if I just declared that the fossil record is organized by color, anyone could go and check that and see clearly it's not organized by color. I encourage everyone listening, go and check yourself the order that these fossils present. There's a site you can go to in Alabama for those listening that's only a couple miles away from Lenox, Alabama in Dallas County. And you can go there and you can see the ordering of these fossil layers yourself. And if you want to see the whole geologic column, you can do that. Claims you can't, but you can. You got to go to North Dakota, which sucks, but you can do that. You can see the whole thing. There's an order, and it is not explained by the way that Kent tries so desperately to explain this order. It just utterly fails. So I'm happy to get into that. But finally, which is the real cult? Evolution, as Kent claims, or Dinosaur Adventureland? So I thought that the best way to answer this question is with the experts. Cult Recovery 101. This is a website that actually offers counseling to people that were used to be in cults to get them more mentally healthy. And they provide this checklist to see if this applies to you or your group, to see if you're in the cult. So number one, the group is focused on a living leader to whom members seem to display excessive, zealous, unquestioning commitment. Well, we don't see anything like that on the evolutionist side. Nobody is worshiping Darwin. Most evolutionists agree that he was wrong about a lot of things. So there's obviously not that on our side. But on the other side at Dinosaur Adventureland, it kind of all does revolve around one living leader. When I was there, one of the employees actually told me that he had decided to give a year of his life to God. And that's what made him decide to move to Dinosaur Adventureland and work for Kent Hovind. I mean, you can't even write something like that on the nose. The group is preoccupied with bringing in new members. That's obvious. The group is preoccupied with making money. I mean, the donations, the DVDs, it all checks out. You've got these techniques of memorizing these little mantras like cows always produce cows, dogs always produce dogs that you can just quickly repeat without having to think about. There are all of these other member things that pretty much apply to Kent and Dinosaur Adventureland. I mean, it's a very us versus them mentality, the outside world, the evolutionists versus us truth havers that make you feel like you're in this special position and that your ministry has some sort of meaning and purpose and value, and it makes you feel good and united against the outside world that's trying to suppress the truth. But I mean, this is just what cults do. This is the cult ideology, and the six stages are a part of that. It's part of trying to position the others as having their own rival religion that is an existential threat to your own. It's a way of uniting your followers together. So yeah, to me, it's fairly obvious which one is a cult and which one is actually observable, empirically verifiable science. You decide for yourselves. Thank you.
All right, gentlemen, that concludes 10-minute opening statements. You guys are clearly bringing the heat for tonight's showdown here on the Six Stages of Evolution. Our next phase, since we just had 10 minutes each to put forth arguments, points, objections to each other's positions, will be 10 minutes each to cross-examine each other on what was brought up in the opening statement. So I'm sure you both took notes and know what each other said in terms of opening arguments. Therefore, Kent, since Grayson just ended with his opening statement, let's give you 10 minutes to cross-examine Grayson on what he has said so far. Go ahead.
Well, I think it's obvious he's done went right straight to ad hominem attacks, attacking me for some reason or our ministry here. We don't use tax dollars to support our religion. I admit creation. I believe by faith God created the world. You guys will not admit you have a religion, nothing but a religion. You totally skipped. You just said we have big evidence for the Big Bang, and then you moved right on. No, Grayson, you don't. Evolution is a Big Bang is fairy tale. Where did all the energy come from that's in this universe? Where, if you don't know, which I know you don't, nobody does, well, then you don't have a coherent theory. You want to skip over where did the time come from? Where did space come from? Where did energy come from? It violates the laws of thermodynamics. You skipped it just like I knew you would. I didn't realize you're going to go straight to attacking us for some reason. So I made quite a few notes. I'll have to do you a whack an atheist maybe this Wednesday. I got all kinds of stuff there. You said you have actual science for the six parts of evolution. No, you don't. There is no science behind the Big Bang. There's no science behind chemical evolution. I didn't get to there, but you want to go to that one, 474. Secondly, I said my second stage is chemical evolution. Chemical evolution. Where did it come from?
Kent, did you want to maybe keep, since we're doing cross-exam, did you want to maybe do one point at a time and then have Grayson engage?
Okay, you got to ask me a question.
Okay, Grayson, why did you skip over number one, Big Bang, the origin of time, space, matter? Where did matter and time and space and energy come from? Where did it come from?
I didn't. If you share my screen, Donnie, I can show you the evidence again. I'd be happy to go over it. I showed you the evidence that supports and demonstrates that the Big Bang happened. And I don't think it's an ad hominem because you say evolution is a cult all the time. So unless you're trying to ad hom evolution, I'm not trying to ad hom you. I don't think a cult is an insult. It's just a fact.
I agree. Evolution's a cult, and it's just a fact. Now, show me the slide you have about the Big Bang. You did not show evidence for where the matter and energy and time and space came from. That's not evidence for time, space, matter.
Yeah,
Temperature fluctuation.
If you understand what you're looking at, Kent, this is a map of this is a chart of the CMB power spectrum. The prediction based on the Big Bang that has to start, all of the wavelengths must start at T equals zero, 13.7 billion years ago, for the math to work. The green line is the prediction using that math. And then the red line is the actual observations of the CMB. You can see they agree exactly. And the math requires that the Big Bang started from T equals zero, 13.7 billion years ago.
So answer it in layman's terms. Where did the energy come from? You're talking about temperature fluctuations in thousands of degrees Kelvin. Okay. Where did it come from?
As you correctly stated, nobody knows, but that's not part of the Big Bang theory. The Big Bang theory is not where it came from. The Big Bang theory is simply that the universe was once in a smaller, hotter, denser state. The Big Bang theory does not attempt to even answer the question you're asking.
Well, then you don't have a coherent religion. You are starting with time, space, and matter. You're starting with time. Where did space come from?
Kent, because I don't have a religion. That's the whole thing, is that a religion has to answer all these questions. Science doesn't. Germ theory is not an incomplete theory because it doesn't answer the question of where the universe originates. Germ theory is a complete scientific theory without having to answer this question because science is not a religion.
I agree. Science is not a religion, but evolution is not part of science. That's where you're confused. Beer is sold at football games, Grayson. Beer has nothing to do with football. And beer does not become athletic by association with football constantly, okay? So neither science, evolution does not become science by association with science. It's mixed in our books, but you did not answer where time came from, where space came from, where energy came from. You're showing me a huge amount of energy that you in this chart. Sure, I agree. There's enormous amounts of energy in the universe. Where did it come from?
This is not the aims of the Big Bang Theory to answer. The Big Bang Theory is simply a description of the universe in the past being smaller, hotter, and denser. It's not setting out to explain where that originated from.
Well, that's my point tonight. You have to explain that or you're not touching first base. You want to jump right over first base. You don't have a theory. You just to claim it happened is not science. And to draw a chart of it happening and to claim it expanded faster than the speed of light, trillions of times faster than the speed of light. You want to move matter faster than light, but trillions of times faster than light. That goes contrary to all the science that we know. My point is, it's not observable. You haven't touched first base. You don't have a good theory. Nothing else matters after that. So quit skipping over it and tell me where energy came from, or admit we don't know and we can stop the debate. I win.
Kent, this is not a sufficient criteria in order to rule out evolution. Just like germ theory doesn't need to explain the origins of space, time, and matter in order for germ theory to be a complete theory, neither does evolution.
The evolution you're teaching or want to be taught in our schools does require, like you have these charts, which I'm sure you believe in, of everything coming from an amoeba or a single-celled creature of some kind. That's not science. To simply draw a chart and to say all the forms of life came from a single-celled creature, this is artwork, this is propaganda, or your chart there, drawing lines between these different animals is not proof that it happened. Certainly no fossils can count. Why don't we see it happening today? We don't see any animal changing to something else. Cows always produce cows. That's not a cult. That's a scientific fact. All the farmers in the world will tell you scientifically they can demonstrate cows produce cows. Show me why you have cows connected to sweet potatoes on your chart. Why should I connect a cow to a sweet potato? What is the connection here?
Sure, I can be happy to explain that. It's because the genetics and the fossil record both line up precisely to show that those two organisms share a common ancestor. And that's what this chart is showing. The top is organized horizontally according to genetic similarity, while the vertical is organized according to the types, a number of different fossil insect families found in the various layers of the geologic, the stratigraphic record.
Right. There is no geologic column. We can talk about that in another debate. That's your imagination again. But look at this. Are each of these creatures on this chart made up of matter and use energy?
Yes.
And take up space?
Yes.
Now back to my first question. Where did time, space, matter come from? Don't tell me how they evolved from one to another. Where'd the first one, where did matter come from? They're made up of matter. All of them are. You want to skip first base. I know you do badly want to skip first base, but you don't get a home run, Jason or Grayson, until you answer the question, where did time, space, matter come from? You don't have a complete theory. So that's why that's deliberate. The debate tonight is, why did I divide it up into six? I never thought about that, matching the 6 days of creation. That's certainly new to me, and that's not why I did it. It just happened to be six stages of evolution. And the first five are religious. You believe in them. Nothing to do with the creation. We can argue. See, I'm not demanding the creation be taught in schools. You're demanding your cult religion be taught in schools. It's just a fairy tale. The Big Bang Theory is a fairy tale. You don't have an answer for where time, space, matter came from, or energy, do you?
So, again, this is like going into court trying to figure out who the murderer is in a murderer case and then saying, stop, Your Honor. We cannot figure out who the murderer is unless we figure out where every person involved in this case was born. You don't need that information to figure out who done it, right? This is exactly analogous to germ theory. Like we've been talking about, germ theory is complete even though it doesn't explain the origin of the universe. You can have a complete scientific theory that explains the origin of species without explaining the origin of life, space, time, matter, or the whole universe. This is just a straw man that Kent is trying to propose, because typically religions explain the origin of all those things through a nice magical fairy tale. Scientific theories don't do that, because the scientific theory doesn't have to explain every single aspect of your life like a religion does. Evolution is just for the origin of species. And yes, Kent, we have seen it in like the timescales of recent history. Like we've seen a dog evolve into a single cellular organism. Okay, that seems like macroevolution to me.
Slow down. You saw a dog become a single celled organism? Tell me about
that. Yes, there was a species of dog that existed on North America prior to Columbus that now only exists as a type of venereal cancer cell. It's a single cellular organism that infects others and spreads. That's not a dog at all at that point, but genetically, it's still a member of the dog family.
Hold it. Say that one more time. I want the people to listen to this. A dog became a single celled creature that is now infecting people.
Yeah, and we've also seen single-celled organisms become multicellular organisms, like Chlamydomonas, single-cellular algae that evolved multicellularity. So we've seen both single cell to multi-cell and multi-cell to single cell. That's macroevolution in real time, Kent.
So Grayson is claiming that a dog evolved to a single-celled creature that is still infecting people. This is classic. This is classic. I got to make a sign in our science center just about that, Grayson. You are dreaming.
Well, I don't know how you're going to have enough room, Kent, because you've already got signs on every available surface of that science center.
We will build a bigger science center, Grayson.
Okay. Well, it's called CTVT for anybody that wants to look it up for the exact type. But it's a single cellular organism that infects other dogs, not infects humans. But yes, it used to be its own breed of dog, which no longer exists. And if you want to talk about Chlamydomonas, I've brought that up to you before, and you said you were going to look into it. That was over a year ago. Did you research the single cellular organism that was observed to become multicellular?
Before you keep running, trying to touch home plate, let's go back and touch first base. Okay. You want to skip this badly. I think you admitted roundabout that scientists don't know where time, space, matter, and energy came from.
Correct.
Well, then you're out. The run doesn't count because nothing else matters after that. I've tried to point that out. This is why for years now I have divided the theory, the word evolution up into six different levels or stages. You cannot get past number one. You also cannot get past number two or three or four. Where did life come from? You can make up a story, but all you have is a fairy tale imagination for the first five. You maybe for number five, macro changing one kind, that's what you're talking about, a dog turning into a single cell. That is classic. I'm going to use that one. Okay.
But well, Ken, I showed you the evidence for those four, right? I didn't just say, I didn't use the evidence. I showed it to you. I showed you an HD picture of a star forming, a picture of it. How are you going to deny that?
Well, let's do this. Hey, before you respond, Kent, because we are a minute over. I blinked and it was over. So now, Grayson, since you get to lead the way we'll do equal time. You get 11 minutes. Then maybe you'll want to lead the way on some of those points. So let's reset. Go ahead.
Okay. So, Kent, do we both agree that Scientology is a cult?
Scientology is a cult. Evolution should be included in that cult.
Well, okay, wait. It's just a yes or no. I just wanted to get some common ground here that we can both agree Scientology is a cult, okay? Do we agree that, like, flat Earth is a cult, or is that not a cult to you?
That is certainly a cult. That is a dumb idea.
So, like, if a flat earther decided to buy land and move there and start a church on this land and make it, like, a theme park, I'm just making up a name here, like, Flat Earth Adventureland, like, and every single service they're talking about, like, how NASA is making all this stuff up to suppress the flat earth and suppress the truth, and they're intermingling that with Christian doctrine, that kind of seems like it would be cult-like behavior, no?
Yes, they have a right to do that, of course. This is America, the land of the free and the home of the slave, and so they have a right to, you know, make their cult if they want, just like evolutionists have a right to believe what they want, but quit teaching it in public school.
I just want to point out that when I went to Dinosaur Adventureland, I just went on a random day. I didn't even think about it being Sunday, but I went during your church service.
Yeah.
And during just a random Sunday church service, I felt like you were quoting yourself as often as you were quoting the Bible. Like you were like, dogs always produce dogs. Do you think you came from a rock? They rained on the rocks and the rocks turned to life or soup or whatever. Like it's all your Kent Hovind's greatest hits instead of just focusing on the word of the Bible. Like do you not see that? I mean, shouldn't you just be focusing on just the Bible on Sundays and like maybe just leave one day of your anti-evolution rhetoric, maybe just leave that one day for rest?
I think if you watch, how many videos do I have posted on just on Genesis Baptist Church? Nick?
Thousands, probably.
Over a thousand, yeah. Okay. I think you'll find hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. I've gone through, let's see, Genesis, Exodus, many books in the Bible, verse by verse. I'm going through Psalms now. I do that tomorrow.
Ken, I showed up on one of the days where you were going through that chapter. Like, you were going through a part of the Bible, and then interspersed with that, you were, like, providing your anti-evolution quotes in it. Like, that seems you're mixing up your science with your religion, and this seems like this new kind of Christian brand, like we were talking about with the Flat Earth Christians. If that's a cult, then why isn't this brand of anti-evolution Christianity a cult?
Well, go to any public school and see how they mix evolution in with science all the time. You ought to teach science. This is the biceps, the triceps, the deltoid, the flexors, extenders. You can teach anatomy. And this evolution's got nothing to do with it. They mix it in thoroughly.
I'll reclaim back my time there because science is obviously empirically observable and repeatable. It makes repeatably testable observations that are empirically observable, and we have tested them. So it is, by every definition, a science.
No, we have empirical.
I'm curious, though, Kent. I want to ask you how did you popularize the six stages? Did you come up with them, or did you hear them from somewhere? But when I look it up online, it says that you are the one that popularized these six stages.
Well, I don't know if I did or not. I may popularize them, sure. But
did you make them up, or did you get them from somewhere? I mean, where did you learn them?
I think it's intuitively obvious. Look at it. Where did matter come from? If you want to talk about how matter evolved, well, first you go, how did matter get here?
But you're just saying it's obvious. I mean, that doesn't explain like why you came up with six stages. But you know that the actual evolutionary biologists and the physicists and the scientists, they do not teach evolution that has six stages. So like, why can't you just debunk the science instead of trying to debunk a straw man?
Well, point. You want to skip the first five because you can't answer them. You want to, boy, look at this. I touched home plate. No, stop. You didn't touch first or second or third. You don't get a
right. But if you wanted to debunk the Big Bang theory, then why not just say, I'm going to debunk the Big Bang theory? Why do you have to phrase it as being part of evolution? Why does everything have to be under this evolution umbrella if that's not the way that scientists view things? And if you actually wanted to engage with and debunk the science, shouldn't you meet the scientists where they are rather than building up a straw man and then trying to debunk that?
This is not a straw man, son. Look at it carefully. You still haven't answered yet tonight, other than to say you don't know. Where did matter come from? Claiming it came from a Big Bang and showing temperature changes of different things, that's not. Where did it come from? You're missing the point deliberately. I think maybe I did make it up and popularize it. I didn't make it up. I mean, to me, it's obvious. You got to have something to evolve. Look at number four. How did life get started? You guys want to just say, well, we don't know how it started, but starting with life, this is how fairy tales start. Well, in a land beyond the clouds, stop. There's no land beyond the clouds. You're skipping them, just like I knew you would.
Kent, you're making all the same arguments that other cults make. Like the flat earthers tell me, oh, the globe Earth violates the laws of thermodynamics. It's the same argument you say that evolution violates these laws. Or the sociology, like the Scientologists will say that psychiatry violates the law of, you know, metabolism or whatever. Like they think it's not scientific too. Like these are all the same arguments. So why is it that it's part of a cult ideology when the Scientologists or the flat earthers do it? But when you make the same arguments, it's not part of your cult ideology.
I think we need to analyze that carefully and see if you are not doing the exact same thing, okay? You're just making a claim. Matter was here, time was here, space was here. Look at all the space we've got. Where did that come from? Where did time come? What was before the Big Bang 13.772 billion years ago?
And it's my turn to ask questions, but it's not like I'm making a claim. Saying I don't know something is not making a positive claim about it. It's just an intellectually honest position to take.
Right. Okay. It's intellectually honest for me to divide that word evolution up because you have to have these six different steps. You want to jump right to number six, and you want to skip the first five. That's what
I'm happy to discuss the Big Bang theory with you, Kent. I'm more than happy to discuss stellar nucleosynthesis, stellar evolution. Like, I brought evidence to support each one of those 6 points. The issue is that those are not evolution. If you want to talk about evolution, we can. If you want to talk about the Big Bang, we can. The issue is that you're trying to say the Big Bang is part of evolution when it's a different area of science.
Well, I know you'd very much like to separate it out so you don't have to discuss it, okay?
We can discuss the Big Bang anytime you want, Kent. We can discuss the Big Bang right now. I asked you earlier to lead into the section. Right. Are you denying the high-definition photo I showed you of a star being formed?
You do not know that a star is being formed from that photo. You know that there is a spot putting off a lot of energy. Maybe it's exploding. How do you know that's a star forming?
It's not. It's a proto-star. It's not even a full star. It hasn't undergone.
You don't know that. Nobody knows. Here, you can't.
Here's
you can't
another example, Kent, where you can literally see. Look, it's not in. Sorry, let me switch screens here. It's not in the picture right here, and then it is in the picture here. just a couple years later. You can see the star forming. It's like you can take pictures of these things.
Grayson, you need to learn a little bit of science. This is called occlusion. The star was behind the other one and it's moving, or we're moving, getting a different angle on it. You do not know that you don't know that third dot on there is a star forming.
No, you can see the protostar in the beginning, and then you can see it get much brighter and shine higher. It hasn't changed positions. You can chart this and see that its position hasn't moved. It's just gotten brighter, and it was a protostar. It was not undergoing nuclear fusion in that first picture. I mean, we've taken photographic evidence of things that you say no one's ever observed.
You can't possibly know that's a star forming. And if it is, let me ask you a question. Where did the time, space, and matter and energy come from for the star to form?
It's not necessary to know any of
that. Yeah, right, we can skip that. There's a land beyond the
cloud. And by the way, this is a small detail, but you should be saying time, space, and energy, because we do know where matter came from. Like, we have primordial nuclear synthesis. We know the mechanisms by which has happened. We've replicated it in the lab. We've seen E equals mc squared. You can form matter from energy. So what you really mean to say is time, space, and energy, not time, space, and matter. But that's neither here nor there.
It is here and there. Okay. You keep saying we've seen. No, you haven't. Nobody has ever seen energy turn to matter. Show me that.
No, we have. Like, literally. And we, by the way, is talking about the human species and scientists. Okay. And we have literally in the lab, in scientific experiments, shown energy becoming matter. But the point of this was talking about the six stages of evolution.
For the record, I disagree. You're lying or dumb on that topic, okay? We've never
seen
energy.
You can look it up, Kent. Just because you're ignorant about something doesn't mean it doesn't exist. You just don't know about it because you haven't looked up any new science this century.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, your entire slides. I borrowed your slide from the 90s and it hasn't changed at all. The slide we're looking at right now is from the 90s. You haven't updated your slides. You never look at new science. I told you a year ago, I said Chlamydomonas evolved multicellularity, and you told me to my face that you were going to look into it. Have you looked into it, Kent?
I forgot. I'm sorry. It's real busy around here, okay? We're trying to save people from your religious cult, okay? And we're doing a good job. Thousands of people being converted over away from stupid religion of evolution. But
yeah, I mean, the flat earthers make the same statements. The Scientologists make the same statements. The Jim Jones cult talked about the U.S. government as being a giant cult and how they're after them too. So again, I mean, there are so many parallels. This is just cult-like thinking and behavior.
That's exactly what you atheists do. Nothing but cult-like. There's no God. The universe got here by nobody made it. We just know it. That's why I say evolution is a religious cult. Prove me wrong. Every Thursday and Friday night, we do that.
Well, I did prove you wrong, Kent, because I went through the actual points of what makes something a cult, and I showed that it doesn't apply to evolution, and it does apply to Dinosaur Adventureland. So I did show you wrong using the actual professional cult counseling opinion.
Wow. Okay, let's give Kent a chance to respond, and then, gentlemen, we're going to transition into a free-flowing discussion. So less strict, just kind of back and forth, conversational style, and I do want to make sure we're engaging each of the scientific points brought up so far. Kent, have a final word on this cross-exam, and then we'll move on.
He showed a slide of makes up a cult. DAL is not a cult. I've been a Baptist preacher for 50 years. I believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate. I believe cows always produce cows. I believe in science. I love science. Evolution is not part of it. I'm trying to rescue people. It's a rescue mission here from the dumb religion they're taught. And Grayson, the reason I don't update that slide is true. I taught math for years. Do you know 2 + 2 has been 4 for a long time? There's no need to update that slide about 2 + 2 = 4. It's correct. This is correct.
Ben, did you know that after you made that slide, we then took high definition photographs of stars forming, making your slide outdated?
You are dreaming if that is a high-definition photo of a star forming.
I showed it to you yourself. You can look at it with your own eyes.
I saw it. I saw a spot with rays coming off. You don't know that's a star forming.
This is exactly like flat earthers. When I show them actual photographic proof that the Earth is not flat, they say, that doesn't mean anything. That's fake. Doesn't count as evidence. It's the same exact arguments from the flat earthers, Ken.
Okay, I'm not a flat earther. Kansas is flat. The rest of it's round. I've said that for years. I've never been a flat earther, so quit equating me to that. Now, I think we can show
you're giving me all the same arguments.
No. I can show you photographic evidence. I can show you thousands of examples from history. Cows always produce cows. Nothing else. Every farmer on the planet throughout all of history will tell you cows produce cows.
We can generation of cow is slightly different from the previous generation. Every single one.
Therefore, cows are related to petunias. Is that what you're trying to say?
I want you to acknowledge. Do you agree that every single generation is slightly different?
I think they're slightly different within limits.
You might what are those limits other than just the pure physical limits of anatomy?
I think every farmer will tell you there's limits. They try to get cows to give more milk or more beef, but all of history has shown all the breeding we get is variations within the same kind.
So here's the thing that actual all breeding has ever shown, right? Is that every single generation is slightly different, and those differences continue to add up and don't have any limit. If you compare generation one to generation two to generation 50 to generation 1,000 to generation 100,000, guess what? It gets more and more and more different, and it never asymptotically approaches any limit. That's a fairy tale.
That's the fairy tale. You are correct to say that it never approaches the limit. They've been trying to get cows to give more milk. They now have a world record cow give 280 pounds a day.
And I think you just got confused. You're the one advocating that it would asymptotically approach a limit. That is a fairy tale, and that's your position.
No, it did approach a limit. Do you think they'll ever get a cow to give 4 trillion tons of milk a day?
No, again, this is physical limits of anatomy. I said other than the physical limits of anatomy, what are the limits? And the only limits you ever bring up are just the limits of physics, like a cow jumping over the moon.
Okay, well, let's take the limits of biology. If you have one cow evolve that's no longer able to reproduce with all the rest of the cows, who's it going to mate with?
Yeah, that's not how evolution works, though. This is another straw man. Like, you're basically saying that, like, in the evolution of language, which we both agree that languages change over time, that every single generation gives birth to a generation that's slightly different in language. You don't speak exactly the same as your parents, but you can still understand them. At no point does a French speaker give birth to a Spanish speaker. That's your straw man about how evolution works. In reality, Latin speakers gave birth to generation after generation that spoke slightly, slightly different versions than their parents until you get French.
Ooh, je parle pour français, monsieur. Mais oui. Yes. This is all based on somebody with some intelligence changing the words. You want to change an amoeba to a cow with no intelligence involved.
Mutation will do that.
You think a mutation would change an amoeba to a cow?
Enough mutations over enough successive generations, you can go from a single cellular organism to a cow. Yes. And that change is reflected in the fossil record.
No, that's why I say it's a cult. You believe this to happen, but we could get tens of millions of people to testify. They've never seen any such thing. They seem to run into a brick wall when they try to make varieties of cows or varieties of dogs or whatever they're breeding. The Bible says they will bring forth after their kind. There are no.
Do you believe that Uranus revolves around the sun?
I believe it does.
So nobody has ever seen Uranus revolve around the sun because it takes so long to revolve around it.
Right.
But you believe that it does because the evidence suggests it. So even if every single person on Earth, nobody's ever witnessed Uranus revolve around the sun, it still happens and you still acknowledge that because of the evidence. It's the same with evolution.
Right. Science. What we can observe, study, test, what do we know? We know Uranus is moving. We can see that moving. We know it seems to be moving in a trajectory that means it's held by gravity from the sun. So it would be logical and intuitive to say it probably goes around the sun like all the rest of them. But to see farmers produce 450 varieties of cows, most of which would not survive in nature, you got to babysit them, and therefore conclude that a cow is related to a sunflower, that's stupid. That's all I'm saying.
Let's see. When you observe that every single generation is slightly genetically different than their parents, and that there is nothing that stops those differences from continuously adding up every single generation with no observed limit ever occurring, this has never been observed. You don't all of a sudden those differences just stop accumulating and you get a plateau. No, they continuously continue accumulating every single generation. No one's ever observed this limit. You're saying that you believe that this limit exists, but there's no evidence for it, Kent. We have the evidence for cow evolution. We can trace its fossil record going back, and we see, hey, right around the time in the fossil record where you stop seeing cows, you start seeing more basal cow-like ancestors. And guess what? When you stop seeing those, you see even more basal organisms, and you stop seeing the modern species, and you start seeing species that can agglomerate traits that are intermediate to our current species. The right. fossil record's full of them.
Grayson, this is part of your cult teaching. There is no such thing as a fossil record. There are fossils by the trillions. They're not a record. None of them talk. None of them have a date stamped on them. You arrange them in order, and there is no such thing as a geologic column.
No, Kent, you don't arrange them in order. You find them in
you
order.
You think so? If you
yeah,
don't find
I know
them,
so. Because no, guess don't. What? In Lenox, Alabama, you yeah. got a lot of Cenozoic rock around you. If you were to dig down below that, guess what you'll find? Cretaceous layers. And okay. you will stop finding, eventually when you start digging down, you'll stop finding mammals, Kent, and you'll start finding dinosaurs. Like, I mean, it's more dinosaurs and less mammals, I mean. But, I mean, there is an order to this. You can just dig down under your feet, and you can see that these things are arranged in order. And okay. that order cannot be explained by body density, intelligence, mobility, or habitat.
Okay, so tell me, you said, which layer did you find here in Lenox, Alabama? Which one was it?
You've got the Cenozoic layer. Like, you got from the tertiary period up there in Lenox.
Okay, so we have Cenozoic material here. And how do you know it is Cenozoic?
Because you can radiometrically date igneous layers bracketing above and below it. And isn't it funny how if there's no order, as soon as you date an igneous layer, you know exactly what fossils you're going to find above and below it. Isn't that weird? If there's no order, why would that be the case?
Well, first, that's something you were taught that is not true at all, okay? But there's no igneous rock around here that I'm aware of.
Prove me wrong, though. Find one counterexample, just one.
Oh, no. Where's the igneous rock? Where's there been a volcano near Lenox, Alabama?
Well, just find me one igneous layer to which you can date it, and then you don't find the fossils we would expect above and below it.
Okay, so you said, I don't think there's any igneous rock anywhere near here that I'm aware of. It's all sedimentary rock, okay? But you said the Cenozoic era, which supposedly started 65.5 million years ago. And what did you find below that, did you say?
The Cretaceous layers.
You're going to find Cretaceous, which is 145 million years old. Okay. Mm-hmm. Where was all the Cenozoic dirt sitting for 90 million years waiting to land?
It was in other locations. It was in other layers that were weathered down. And here's the thing. I know you're about to say and ask, did it come from space? Here's the fun thing, Kent. Actually, a lot of material does come from space, and we've recorded just how much material falls per day from space, and it's literally tons of material. But the majority of it is not coming from space. I know that's just a joke you have. The majority of it is weathered from other locations and then carried as sediment and deposited in the new location, which then starts the radiometric clock. You do not date the material. You date the formation of the layer.
So you're saying the layers are different? We're on the wrong topic here, okay? We're supposed to be on my reason. I made six levels or stages to evolution. But you guys want to just slap and run. You want to miss first base. If you don't know where time, space, matter came from, this is why I had to divide it up so people like you would understand how dumb their religion is, okay?
You saw the CMB power spectrum, which you can only construct if you have boundary conditions that starts at T equals zero, where all wavelengths in the universe equal the same value. That's a T equals zero moment required by the Big Bang. You cannot construct that prediction without it. And when we test the prediction against actual observation, it matches exactly. If you want to see the chart again, I'd be happy to show it to you. It's one of the most amazing verified predictions in all of science.
Okay, I'll make a verified prediction here. I agree there's a T equals zero in the beginning. God created the heaven and the earth. That's the T equals zero. And I make a prediction. Cows will always produce cows. Dogs will always produce dogs. No matter how hard you try, you will never get something that anybody would consider a non-cow or a non-dog. You never. No.
Well, here's the issue. Okay, first of all, Kent, you're the one dodging now because I'm bringing up the origin of space, time, and energy, and you're the one going back to dogs creating dogs. So who's the one that doesn't want to talk about the origins now?
Okay, let's talk about origins. You said you don't know. You said you have a chart. Well, you drew lines on paper with dots on them. Well, and that's proof that time had zero. I agree. Time had zero.
So, Ken, I did not draw those lines, right? This is based on actual observation data and theoretical physics calculations. These are not just arbitrary lines that somebody drew. Let me just show this again. These are not arbitrary. There's nothing arbitrary about this. These are not just lines that somebody drew. They reflect actual empirical observations and actual mathematical calculations that if you think are flawed, you need to go and find the flaw in them. Grayson. These are not just people making up lines on a chart. This is real science.
Grayson, can you maybe do me a favor and then for the audience sake, can you take 30 seconds and in a nutshell explain what this specific piece of evidence is?
Okay.
For the Big Bang, and then we'll throw it to Kent to respond to it.
Yes. Okay. So basically, every direction that we look in the sky, you can find microwave radiation, and it forms this very weird pattern that looks kind of like television static, where some is a little bit hotter, some is a little bit colder. And when you map that entire pattern out, you can then create this power spectrum. So you see on the y-axis here, those are the temperature fluctuations, and you can basically predict based on the Lambda CDM model, which is the Big Bang, dark energy, and dark matter, based on how we observe those things. So this is not just like they're plugging in numbers to make the math work. They're based on what our observations are. We plug those numbers into the theory, and we can create a theoretical prediction for what this power spectrum should look like in the actual observed microwave background. And so then the red lines with the associated error bars are the actual observations from the microwave background. So this doesn't just require, like, I know Kent is saying, well, he also has a T equals zero moment. The thing is that his T equals zero moment is very, very different from the Big Bang's T equals zero moment. Yeah. The Big Bang, like, you get stars and black holes and galaxies and planets first, way before you ever get the Earth and grass and whatever the days of 6 days of creation have. So the order is completely different. And this right here requires 380,000 years as the boundary conditions. You start at T equals zero, and the other boundary condition required to make this is 380,000 years. If it's smaller, if it's only 1,000 years, you won't get a chart that looks like this. And this, with 380,000 years between the initial T equals zero and the actual formation of that microwave background, that is what's required to make this chart, and this is the chart that's accurate and perfectly matches reality.
Okay, so it's essentially a power spectrum based on the microwave background radiation that we see in the universe. Exactly. And then you're saying that that points to the necessity of a Big Bang, the Big Bang.
Basically, the red is the observed data, and the green is what they use the math to predict. And that math requires this 380,000-year period between T equals zero and the actual formation of this microwave background. That 380,000 years is required to make this theoretical prediction.
Okay, appreciate that. Kent, let's throw it to you. Take as much time as you need to provide your thoughts. Go ahead.
That is a classic example of what we call the snow job, okay? Let's throw out this chart and this data, okay? You've shown a bunch of, like 6,000 degrees Kelvin. Ooh, that's pretty hot, okay? You still don't know where the energy came from. To say it matches the Big Bang, you're making a claim tonight that nobody on the audience is going to follow or understand, okay? So if there's a temperature change, could it be that the universe, we see microwave background energy coming? I agree. Where's the energy coming from? Oh, could it be that there's been some stars exploding throughout space, throughout time? No, supernovas and novas, we see that happen. Would that upset the background radiation? Of course it would. Would we see chaos in the universe, things decaying and falling apart? Yeah, stars disintegrating. Could that be causing this? We're seeing different temperature changes in space. I agree. And then you're concluding this chart is accurate? Grayson, you're missing the first base. Where'd the energy come from? You don't have a good theory until you tell me. You're saying we have energy. I agree. There's plenty of energy in the universe. That's what I told you. All the stars, all the energy from all the stars that have ever burned in all of history was in that dot. Do you believe all this energy from all these stars they're observing, red lines and green lines, was all that energy in a dot smaller than an atom initially?
Okay, so you notice the classic deflection here. I mean, Kent is obviously not familiar with the cosmology behind this, so he's reduced to asking, well, couldn't it be this other possibility? Well, actually, if you knew about this, you would know, no, Kent, it actually could not be that other possibility because, again, this is not arbitrary. Each one of those peaks is at an exactly precise height, and that's due to the exact composition between dark matter, dark energy, baryonic matter, the various constants of the universe that we observe in other independent means. Like, we look at like the distribution and patterns of galaxy locations and movement, and we figure out how much dark matter is. We plug that in and we get this chart, and it perfectly matches the microwave background, something that's totally independent. So no, this is exactly demonstrating the Big Bang model with dark matter and dark energy and inflation and all of that. This isn't, there's no other possible explanation for this data. Right. You're not familiar with one. You're just saying, couldn't it be possible? Well, no, Kent, no, it couldn't be. And then you're you're deflecting, oh, back to base one, because I don't want to deal with this. This proves the Big Bang, but you don't know about enough information to debunk this. So you'll go back and say, where did the energy come from? And oh, couldn't you store everything in such a small little space? You use the same argument in your opening. But yes, Kent, we have created quark gluon plasma in particle accelerators, and you can compress the energy of a gallon of milk or water or whatever you want into like literal micro femto centimeter squared cubed volumes, like such a small, small volume of quark gluon plasma. We've created quark gluon plasma before. We know how energy dense it is, and you could compact the whole Earth into something very, very, very small if it's just quark gluon plasma. And there's physics beyond that at higher densities. So yes, I know you're very incredulous that you can pack all this into a small volume, but right. We've shown the physics explaining how to do that, and we do it every day in particle accelerators.
So is this particle accelerator designed, and is it taking up some energy to do this? Does it take a lot of energy to squeeze these particles?
Yeah, but you get a lot out too, because the energy in that mass is immense. But yes, you do have to create a system that will compact this down enough. But the thing is, when we make observations like the cosmic microwave background, that is showing us that the universe used to be very, very highly dense itself. It was so dense that like there could not even be atoms. The existence of the cosmic microwave background shows us that at one point the universe was so small and so hot and so dense that there was only plasma and atoms could not even exist. It was so hot.
Mm. And all that temperature from all the stars that have ever burned for all these 14 billion years, was all that temperature combined was in that dot. That's a hot dot.
Way more than that. Yeah.
Oh, way. Yeah. Because some of it got lost in space. So could you please tell me?
You know that an argument from incredulity is an actual logical fallacy, right?
That's what you've been making all night, son. Now, listen, you claim.
That's what you're just making right now.
You claim there is dark matter and dark energy. Mm-hmm. And these lines on paper showed the dark energy. Explain what dark matter and dark energy, if we can't see it, how do we know it exists? Okay.
Sure. Well, we can't see the wind, and we also know that exists. That's because there's other means other than sight to verify if something exists or not. I mean, like atomic theory, we know atoms exist. We can't see atoms, which, by the way, atomic theory, that's another complete scientific theory that doesn't explain the origin of space, time, and matter. So again, it's not sufficient to be a complete scientific theory. But anyways, you're asking... sorry, could you repeat your question, Kent? Sorry, I kind of got off on a little bit of a side tangent there.
Explain exactly what is dark energy and dark matter, and how do we know it exists?
Yes. So there are actually, depending on how you count them, 6 or 7 completely independent methods of verifying that dark matter exists, and they all agree on the same amount of the dark matter. So one of the methods is the chart that we showed. Another method is looking at galaxy rotations. Another method is looking at gravitational lensing. There's another method at looking at the way that galaxy clusters collide with each other that cannot be explained without dark matter. Essentially, there are multiple independent corroborating sources of evidence that all show us that about 90% of the matter in the universe is dark matter, which means that it's not composed of particles like atoms that interact electromagnetically.
So the dark matter is not made up of atoms. So what is it made of?
We don't know.
Okay, but it exists. You know it exists.
Yes, just to illustrate this point, Kent, you can know that something exists without knowing its composition. For thousands and thousands of years, humans knew that things existed, but we didn't know about atoms. So yes, you can know that things exist without knowing what they're made of.
Okay. Right. I understand. Now, you talked about galaxy rotation and all this kind of stuff. And I agree. Galaxies appear to be rotating. And I'm still wondering where the energy initiated from. What's your starting point? You said the energy was all in a dot. You didn't answer the question. Where did it come from? This is why I made this chart. Just for you, Grayson, there are six levels. You still haven't gotten on first base.
I was just saying, Kent, you made this chart before I was even born. So it's not that you made this chart for me. But I know you keep going back to the same old tired question that I've answered again and again now about where the initial energy came from. Let me spell it out for you. Nobody knows, okay? You don't have the evidence to say one way or the other. I know you think that you know. You don't have the evidence to back up your claims, though. We don't know. And here's the kicker. It's not sufficient that we know where all the energy in the universe ultimately originated from for us to know that the Big Bang happened, that stellar evolution happens, that nucleosynthesis happens, that abiogenesis happened, or that evolution happens. That is not a sufficient criteria to demonstrate the veracity of any of those scientific theories.
So we will skip over where matter came from. Then you.
I already answered that.
Oh, yeah. We don't know. Good. Thank you.
Primordial nucleosynthesis. That's the answer.
So do you know where life came from?
Abiogenesis.
That's a word, abiogenesis. It means life came from nothing. It came from non-living matter.
Yes.
That, again, is making a claim. That's not science. That's my
whole point. No, it's a scientific hypothesis. It's not yet a theory. A theory explains a theory explains the why something happens. We don't have that for abiogenesis, yes, but here's the thing, though. We have logical induction, and we have the scientific method, and that's enough for us to say that the safest answer, if you're going to be betting money, you're going to go with the naturalistic hypothesis, because in human history, that's been the most historic track record of truth.
That's what you believe. Donnie, we said we'd go 2 hours. It's been 2.5. I've had a long day. I'm not going to debate him again. So I would like to make a claim that he admitted finally, we don't know where the energy came from. Therefore, you're in a fairy tale world. We have got all this energy. We got all this gravity. We got all these laws, physical laws governing the universe. We don't know where they came from, but now let's take it from there. This is a fairy tale. We've got a land in a beautiful land beyond the clouds. You don't have a land beyond the clouds. You have a religion, Grayson, and you're a very zealous preacher of your religion. And you're good at duping your followers to believing you, just like Jim Jones was. You're just very similar to, I could draw a lot of parallels to what you teach and Jim Jones. I bet he had charts about how everybody's out to get us, you know, and everybody drink this Kool-Aid or curry before we can all die and go to our new planet out there beyond the clouds or wherever he was going, okay? You're doing the same thing. You're the cult, Grayson. You're the cult.
All right, guys, we do have a lot of audience questions. Kent, I appreciate those final words in the discussion. Did you each want to take, it's up to you, Grayson, Kent. There was quite a bit discussed in the discussion portion. Did you guys want to take a couple minutes each to wrap up your thoughts, wrap up your points, address anything you feel has been left hanging, or did you want to go straight into Q&A? Grayson, what do you prefer?
Well, Kent just kind of got a little spot right there to wrap up his thoughts. So maybe if he could continue since he went first, right? So that would make me get the last conclusion. Maybe I could think about my concluding statement while he's given the rest of his.
Sure, let's do that. Kent, we're going to give you 2 minutes just to wrap up your thoughts, wrap up your points in the form of a concluding statement for tonight's debate. We'll do the same for Grayson, then we'll move into some audience questions. Go ahead.
All right, 2 minutes. I think all the observable evidence in the universe says that design demands a designer. If I told you nobody made this pencil, you'd think I was silly. I don't know who made it, but I know somebody made it. If I told you nobody made this business card with writing on there that made into English speakers makes sense. Nobody made that. That would be silly. Grayson wants us to believe, by faith, that nobody made this complex universe that we see. All these planets going around the sun in beautiful order and spinning just the right speed to have, there's so much things on Earth perfect for life to exist here. Just the right gravity, just the right mixture of gases, just the right mixture of minerals in the soils. I think it had to be a designer. He's running from that. He doesn't want there to be a designer because that designer might have rules they don't want to follow. That's the real reason. I will stick by my guns. Evolution is nothing but a religious cult that people believe in, and they believe in it strongly, and they preach it to their followers like he's doing tonight. And he's going to get them to drink the Kool-Aid and go off to their la-la land, which won't be heaven, okay? So I believe strongly the Bible is true. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. There's no other logical answer. Somebody outside of time, space, matter created time, space, matter. And he told us in 10 words, in the beginning, God created heaven and the earth. 10 words. That was it. God did it. I take that. I believe it by faith. I admit mine's a faith. He will never admit his is a religion. He wants you to believe that he's got science on his side. He doesn't know where time or space or matter came from or how life got started. Just to say the word abiogenesis, that doesn't make it happen again. Take a bunch of chemicals. I'll tell you what, get all the scientists in the world and make an acorn. All the scientists in the world can't make an acorn, which is able to make an oak tree. Ah, they can't do that. You guys are dreaming. You're in La La Land. You're in SpongeBob world. Just imagine time, space, matter. That's the dumbest religion in the world and most dangerous. And I'll stick by my guns, Grayson. That was the foundation for Hitler. It really was. That's the foundation for communism, socialism, Marxism. The normal numbskulls that want to say one world government. That's the foundation for them, too. They cover that in video number 5. Get my videos. Watch those series with an open mind. I think you'll come away saying, wow, evolution's a cult. You're right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kent, for that concluding statement. Grayson, we will give you equal time for a concluding statement. You got roughly 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Cool. So, like, Kent started this off by accusing me of ad hom, and I'm sure that there are going to be plenty of his followers in the comments saying that all I did was ad hom by accusing Dinosaur Adventureland of being a cult. But we've all heard it from Kent's own mouth. He repeatedly calls evolution a cult. He calls it dumb. He calls it a dangerous religion. So I think that it's totally fair to volley those same criticisms at Kent and Dinosaur Adventureland when we actually look through all the criteria of what actually is a cult and we find that none of it applies to evolution and there are a whole lot of red flags applying to Dinosaur Adventureland. So again, you be the judge. Just go to that Cult 101 website and look through their criteria. And I know that there are plenty of people watching tonight in the pews over at Dinosaur Adventureland. Maybe go on that website yourself and see if anything rings a bell. Anyways, Kent said that my real reason for not believing in a designer was because I don't want to have like a boss or something and I want to be independent. But like, not really. The real reason is that I don't see evidence of it. For me to believe something, I need a good reason or good evidence to believe it. And I don't feel like that I have that for young earth creationism or the Bible or God's existence. So until I do, I wouldn't believe anything unless I have a good reason to. Finally, I just think that it's kind of telling that I repeatedly brought up germ theory or atomic theory of examples of theories that Kent would never use this logic against, even though it would apply to. Like he says, evolution is not a complete theory, and we can't even talk about evolution unless we talk about the origins of space, time, and matter. But like, why doesn't he apply this to germ theory? He would not engage that. This whole debate, I was trying to get him to actually just engage with this line of evidence, and I never heard him address germ theory or atomic theory. Like, you can't do atomic theory unless you have atoms, unless you have an origin of space, time, and matter, Kent. The exact same arguments apply. You can't have germ theory without germs, which you need abiogenesis and the Big Bang for. So again, all of your arguments against evolution would apply to any other theory in science. So it doesn't work at all. That's all I got to say. We can move on to Q&A.
All right, gentlemen, Kent and Grayson, very engaging, stimulating round six. So, okay, let's move into some audience questions. We have all the fan favorites in the chat. And so we should have some fun here in the Q&A. Let's start at the beginning. Wade the Wizard is here, and he's got a challenge for you, Kent. I challenge Kent to provide one rational argument opposing evolution. Go ahead, Kent.
Well, this is precisely why we need my 6 different levels or meanings or stages for that word evolution. Which one are you talking about, Wade? And what color hat you have on tonight? Okay. Are you talking about variations within the kind? I think everybody would agree that happens. Are you talking about all the animals being related to a common ancestor? I don't think that's ever been observed. You can believe that. So I don't need to see, you're missing the point. I don't need to provide evidence against evolution. You guys need to provide evidence for evolution because you're the ones that want to use tax dollars to force it down all the kids' throats in school. I'm not asking everybody teach my religion in school. You're demanding everybody teach your religion in school. Okay, let's see the evidence. Show me the evidence of an amoeba ever producing something other than an amoeba. There's a lot of creatures that have one day generational time. Bacteria, they're bacteria that go 8 hours. Born, grow up, get married, have kids in 8 hours. Okay, that's three generations a day, but they never change anything but a bacteria. All of observed science tells us bacteria produce bacteria, nothing else. You can imagine these accumulation of these things. Grayson has a vivid imagination. Just imagine these bacteria over millions of years. We've watched them over thousands of generations. It didn't happen. He imagines it might happen. He and SpongeBob ought to start a club together. So I don't need to, Wizard, I don't need to prove any evidence against evolution. You should provide evidence for it. That's why for number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, nobody's ever given any other than a chart on paper.
Okay, well, I gave you plenty of actual empirical evidence for all of those tonight. I also don't need to imagine anything because, like we went over, we've observed single cellular organisms evolving multicellularity in real time with division of specialties of labor, with everything that would constitute it as true multicellularity, not just a colony of single cells. We've seen it. Exactly what you're saying doesn't exist. So again, this is just you being ignorant of the actual evidence and trying to say that it doesn't exist just because you're not aware of it. So there was a lot that you said there. There was one other point that I wanted to address, but it escapes me now. So I guess I apologize for that to the audience members because I wanted to make that point.
They're never going to forgive you, Grayson.
Welcome to my world of forgetting things. Yeah. No, they're good. Next question.
Okay, here we go. Vans 182 Workshop, $10 super chat. Appreciate the support, and it's for you, Grayson. Did the first cow come from something that was not a cow? If so, did it break the law of monophily?
No. So basically, the designation, like, you're going to be in a gray area where, you know, at what point you say this is a cow and this is not a cow. It's very obvious on either end of the spectrum, but when you start getting into the in-between, where you draw that designation is pretty arbitrary. It's exactly analogous to what we discussed with the evolution of language, where at some point, it's not like a Latin speaker gave birth to a French speaker, but Latin became French, and you can't really just say, oh, at one point, this was Latin, and then this was French. There's not a smooth demarcation line because it's a gradation of, like, gradual variation and change. It's exactly analogous to evolutionary change. So your question doesn't apply to the evolution of languages, and it doesn't apply to the evolution of organisms.
Thank you, Grayson. Kent, go ahead. Floor is yours.
What's interesting, when I show examples like the Model T evolving into the Lincoln Continental, they'll say, well, cows don't reproduce. Okay. Languages don't reproduce either. Okay. So they jump on my analogy saying that's not living. And I say, well, if you made the cars able to also reproduce, now you'd really have a problem. Okay.
Well, actually, languages do reproduce. They reproduce along with humans. Like, I'm an English speaker. If I have children, they'll also be English speakers. Therefore, there's been a reproduction of English speakers. And English as a language produces, like, reproduces over time and differentiates. Like, there will be branches of English that evolve and then split apart, and you can no longer speak in between them. It's an analogy for speciation.
Ah, well, we'll take on that some other time. So to answer the question for Vans 182, all cows produce cows. They always have. They came from God's original created cow. And there's been a lot of varieties within that. 450 now recognized breeds of cows had a common ancestor called a cow. The law of monophily says they'll always stay within their phylum. Okay, well, God said they'll bring forth after their kind. He said that 20 times in the first 7 chapters. That would be science to say that's what we've observed. We can look at all the evidence from all the farmers and say, wow, that book must be right. Maybe God made them so they'd always bring forth after their kind. Huh. Now, if you want to imagine they went outside of that, that's SpongeBob. Go ahead.
Thank you, Kat. All right. Your biggest fan, creationist, crybaby, no Q&A is complete without a question from the crybaby. So here you go. Question for you, Kent. Singularity is a state where space-time is unified at extreme conditions. So there was no before, because our universal time frame only began at that moment. Why do you call it a dot?
Well, let me read what the European Space Agency said again as I started. Time, space, matter all began with a big bang. In a fraction of a second, the universe grew from smaller than a single atom. I guess that's what I would assume to be a dot. What would you call it?
I would not call it a dot.
Okay, call it something else. Do you believe the universe was all fitting in a space smaller than an atom? You believe that?
You could just call it a very small volume, and the evidence directly reflects that. The existence of the cosmic microwave background is enough to establish that as a scientific fact. The universe used to be in a smaller, hotter, denser state. The CMB shows that.
So Ken, you want the last word? It was for you.
Yeah, I will continue calling it a dot, whether you like it or not, crybaby. It's a dot, smaller than an atom.
All right, let's get one for you now, Grayson. Here we go. Question for Grayson from Tolkienomics. Without genomic data, can genotypic conclusions be drawn from phenotypic expressions? If not, why is mutation evolution more likely than hybridization or HGT? Horizontal gene transfer, maybe, to drive change. Go ahead.
First of all, props, Donnie. I'm impressed with the horizontal gene transfer call out there. But yes, so as a general rule, there is stuff that, like, convergent evolution that can muddy these things up. But we initially constructed the phylogenetic trees based on morphology before we had genetics. And with, like, a few exceptions, those phylogenetic trees held up after we verified them with genetics. There were a few things that, this was actually over here, and a few corrections that had to be made. But overall, over 90% accurate with just the morphology constructed phylogenetic trees whenever we had the genetics after the fact to verify those. So, with a grain of salt, you can actually get a fairly accurate phylogenetic tree using phenotypic expressions in terms of, like, the actual anatomical features. And that's what the history of phylogenetics clearly shows us.
Thank you, Grayson. Kent, floor is yours if you had anything you wanted to add.
Well, we could go all night on just that topic. The similarity of, structures that he talked about is evidence of a common designer. We have four limbs, like, similar to a whale. They got two bones in their flipper like we got. Well, they need to flip, twist it around like we need to twist ours around. So it's a common designer. It's a good design. So I've said for years, and I'll continue saying it until I die. And when I die, my videos are going to keep going, guys. What are you going to do about that? I teach that you guys believe we started as a protista or a protozoa or a single cell creature, slowly became a fish. That's not science. Then everything evolved into humans. Not everything, but some of them did. I pointed out, and I'll continue to point out, this is a religious belief, and you're welcome to keep it, but it's not scientifically observable. This textbook says all the many forms of life observed came from a common ancestor. That's not a scientific statement. That's a statement of religion. Grayson has made many religious dogmatic statements, like a cult leader would, like Hitler did. The dogmatic statement, the Germans are the superior race, kill everybody else. That's a dogmatic statement. That's not science. He made dogmatic statements. We know stars evolved from a dot or whatever. You don't know that. So I think this is not science. It's been my point all along. Before we discuss evolution, we need to divide it up into six slices. Maybe I should divide it into seven or 10. Would it help if I made 10 instead? Okay. To do with the 6 days of creation. Okay.
Right. So I'm the one ad homming, but I'm also the one that's saying the stuff that's like what Hitler said. Okay. Well, can I share my screen real quick? It's Donnie, so I can show why common design totally fails. So Kent, you would agree that these two moles have pretty common design, right?
I've never studied those two moles.
So one of these is not a mole, actually. One of these is more genetically similar to elephants than to moles. Do you know which one it is? Can you tell from their design?
Are you telling me that blind mole on the right has the little snout to sniff out insects? is becoming a trunk of an elephant. Do you think that is close to an elephant?
No, Kent, I'm actually telling you the mole on the right is a true mole, and the golden mole on the left is the one that's related to an elephant. And determine this by looking at its genetic similarity. So you trying to say that the genetic similarities are due to common design doesn't work, because we can see here that actually the things that are more genetically similar don't have the common design. The golden mole is not more genetically similar to other moles. It's genetically similar to elephants that have a completely different design. So common design totally fails as an answer. Thanks.
Wow. We need 2 hours on that. Well, I'll unpack that another night. I'll feature you again in my Whack an Atheist when I get time.
Wait a minute. Is that a round seven at some point in the future design?
Anytime, Donnie. Okay, we're way over time now. Almost 3 hours. Can we wrap it up, Donnie? Get some more questions in here.
You're off by an hour, Kent. We've only been going for an hour and a half.
My watch is still set without the red time zone change. Either way, I'm wearing it.
That'll do it. That'll do it if you're not changing the time zone.
Hey, so it's just one more thing that you've been wrong about in this debate, so I'll let it slide.
First thing,
time zone debate challenge. Okay, here we go. Let's move on to the next.
I just got a new watch band at Walmart for $6, and forgot to put the time back an hour because watch has been sitting because the band was broke.
Kent, you must have been thinking 3 hours flew by. I think we're losing Kent there a little bit, but let's give him an opportunity. Okay, he's back. All right, here we go. Atheist Junior, he's coming at you, Ken. He's bringing the heat. As a matter of fact, you have another debate with Atheist Junior coming up rather quickly in about a week or so. So here we go. Question for Kent. What would an image of a star forming look like? What would count as evidence to you?
According to the theory of star formation, it would take a whole lot of matter being squeezed into a single space, catching fire or igniting, or nuclear fusion or something happening and heating up and producing a lot of heat like a star does. This is not, you can't possibly observe that in a human lifetime. You saw one picture of one star, of one dot getting brighter. Maybe the clouds were clearing in front of it. Maybe there was a flock of birds in front of it. You don't know that it's a star forming. You see a tiny dot, and now you see a bright dot. And that's your evidence.
Those pictures were taken with infrared spectrum. Wow. So they go through any obscuring layers of dust or anything. The infrared light goes through it. So you cannot obscure it. We can see the protostars are not undergoing nuclear fusion. Then they are. Exactly what you said you would accept for evidence. I showed you, and you denied. That's cult-like behavior. When I show flat earthers evidence right in front of their face, they say it's fake, they deny it. You're doing the same thing. That is cult-like thinking.
Okay, I give you evidence that cows have always produced cows, and that's cult-like thinking for you to imagine that the cows are related to a mole, or elephants are related to a mole because they got similar gene code. Maybe they got similar gene code because the same guy wrote the code.
We already debunked that just now. Did you forget about the moles?
You think you debunked it, I know. But they did not. The similar DNA structure of the moles or the birds or any animals is proof the same guy's writing the code. I've said that all along. The robots that they have now that flex their fingers and pick up a coffee cup or something. They have lines
but
of code.
Can't you believe that the same guy wrote the code for every single species? So then being an explanation for the genetic similarity between species is totally vacuous, because that would mean that every species should be equally genetically similar because the same guy wrote it.
A smart designer could write it any way he wants to write that code.
So it's really weird that he wrote it in a way that perfectly reflects morphological phylogenetics.
That's what you've chosen to believe. We'll see how that works out for you long term.
All right, guys, that's a question about star formation, and boom, we got back to ancestry. I appreciate that, guys. So it's been a comprehensive one. That's good. All right, now we got one for you, Grayson. That was for you, Kent. So here we go. Why ask why Budgery? $5 super chat. Appreciate the support. Here's his question to you. Ask Grayson why Royal Society said Darwinism is dead, because it lacks powers to create new body plans.
Yeah, well, that's just a complete straw man of the actual Royal Society meeting. I've gone back and I've looked at the actual transcribed notes that occurred at that meeting. That is not at all an accurate representation of what happened in that Royal Society meeting. What actually happened was that they were talking about elements of the modern synthesis or neo-Darwinism that are not like mechanisms that are outside of that, such as the discovery of epigenetics. That's not included in Darwinism, but it is absolutely a means of evolutionary change, or niche construction, or so many of the different mechanisms that we've learned about since Darwin. So yes, Darwinism is dead because we've improved it, and we've added in things like epigenetics and niche construction and different modes of evolution that we didn't know about back in Darwin's day. So this is just another straw man, like the six stages.
Okay, thank you, Grayson. Anything you wanted to add to that, Kent?
Well, Grayson likes that word straw man. I'm going to have to use that on him next time. But okay, no, I think a body plan indicates a planner. I think all the bodies were planned and designed. I don't have a problem giving God the glory for all that. Not at all.
So how about the mutation to the body plan that introduces a totally new information, a new feature? Like, I don't know, the human mutation where sometimes humans can be born with tails. That's a totally new anatomical feature that changes the body plan and can result from the mutation in Hawk's genes. So explain that one if evolution isn't real and mutations can't produce new features.
Okay, you're claiming tonight that humans can be born with a tail. You are completely mistaken. Okay, I'll show pictures of that next time. I've got 50,000 slides.
You're probably going to say it's not a true tail because it doesn't have vertebrae or whatever. But actually, there's a medical definition of tails versus pseudotails. So make sure you include that in your definition because according to medical science, they are true tails, not pseudotails.
Ah, okay. So, we're way off on a rabbit trail from the
topic. One more, because I wanted to bring this up and we didn't get a chance to, Kent. I wanted to give you another example of a beneficial mutation that adds new information that wasn't there before. It's called tetrachromacy. It's a mutation that only occurs in women, where one of their three types of cones in their eyes has a duplication and a mutation to where now, in addition to the three that us normal humans have, they have a fourth one, and they have to have a mutation in the number of channels in their brain. And if they have both of those mutations together, which does occur and has been documented, they have tetrachromacy, which has four fully functional types of cones in your eyes that allows you to see literally hundreds of new colors that us normal humans cannot see. So that is new information without the loss of information that is beneficial. So that just seems to totally debunk everything you've been saying about mutation and evolution for years.
Well, that proves we came from a rock, all right. Man, I'm going to have to change. Okay.
This is deflection and a moving of the goalpost because you don't want to address what I actually said.
Okay. Could it be that everybody had that in the original creation and it was lost? Oh, it can't be that way.
It cannot be because we've seen the mutation actually arise on a generational level because that fourth type of cone is different every time the mutation happens. That fourth type of cone, whatever frequency it's sensitive to, changes because it's a new type of cone. It's not like they're inheriting this fourth type of cone. It actually is not present in their ancestors. It is a mutation.
It's not a gene being switched on or something. I've never studied that.
No, it is not. It is a new allele being created. The gene for the types of cones is duplicated, and then that duplicate mutates to create a new type that is not present in the parents.
And therefore, we should make a chart showing we all came from a protozoa.
No, therefore, you're wrong about mutations always being the loss of information and not being beneficial. And I just showed you an example, and you're unable to even deal with it. You keep trying to change the topic.
I've never heard of that one. I will look at that, but...
Tetrachromacy, remember it, because the next time that somebody brings it up to you, I don't want to hear, oh, that's interesting, I've never heard of that, I'll have to look into it. You've heard about it now, I don't want to hear you make that excuse the next time somebody brings it up to you.
Well, first of all, you don't run my schedule around here, and you don't get to tell me what to do, but would you agree that nearly all mutations are detrimental or harmful or lose information?
The majority of them are neutral, but yes, there are more harmful than beneficial mutations.
But mutations drove from all these changes from a protozoa to a whale.
Yes.
Even though most are harmful, it worked anyway, didn't it?
The harmful mutations get culled out of the population by selection and drift. 99% of all mutations will eventually be lost to these two mechanisms.
So even the good ones will be lost.
Nope, the good ones are positively selected for, so they achieve fixation. Selection takes out the negative ones and selects for the positive ones. That's so like the actual basics of evolution, which you think you would understand if you spent your whole life trying to debunk it.
So these women that are able to see these new colors, do they have children that can see the new colors also?
Yeah, if they're women, yeah. Like because it requires two X chromosomes, it's a trait that only expresses in women, but a son can inherit that new version of the cone in their chromosome, but they won't have the full vision of their mother because they don't have the two X chromosomes.
Right. And so if they don't have any daughters, then that wonderful mutation is lost, isn't it?
No, it wouldn't be lost, because if that son that has that allele has a daughter, then they will pass their X chromosome onto the daughter, and then the granddaughter will have tetrachromacy.
So if none of them do, then it is lost. None of them have daughters or granddaughters. Okay.
That's how all mutations work, and that's what I just told you about how Drift culls mutations out of the population.
Right.
And Drift can cull all types of mutations out.
Right. Good ones and bad ones. Okay.
Yeah.
Donnie, a couple
all right, guys.
Go ahead.
We'll try and sneak in one more here, and then we'll wrap it up. I do appreciate the 2 hours that you both have given for tonight's epic showdown on the six stages of evolution. Certainly not a boring debate, that's for sure.
Oh, very engaging. Ken's yawning, he's ready. I imagine that the people in the pews must already be asleep.
You know, when Kent goes to bed, he'll be dreaming for 8 hours about debating you, Grayson. So it'll be an all night.
Doesn't faze me.
Now, Kent has better things to dream about.
So yeah, here we go. Here's a question for you, Grayson, from Tanya Brown. She's curious about your point there on the power spectrum, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Are they using a measure of distance as the reference for age in the power spectrum predictions?
No, you're not using distance for that. It's just the boundary conditions for which, like, basically all the waves start out at the same amplitude. And in order for them to get to the amplitude that we see at the CMB, that requires 380,000 years of each one of those different waves oscillating on independently of each other. So it's basically the way that the data is that you can't get those waves oscillating in a way that will do it faster, that doesn't break physics. And Kent will say, well, oh, how do you know that the laws of physics were always the same? Because we have things like the Oklo nuclear reactor, like, which is a natural nuclear reactor, that shows us that the fine structure constant has been the same for the last 2 billion years, because we can see precisely the same rates of nuclear decay over the previous 2 billion years, actually written into the rock record over in Gabon at Oklo. So we know it's been the same fine structure constant for the last 2 billion years. We can look at quasar absorption spectra and see that the fine structure was the same all the way back then, billions and billions of years before that. And guess what? If the fine structure constant is the same, the speed of light is also the same. And so is big G, so are all of these constants, including the speed of light. So we have direct empirical observations that these constants actually are constant and don't change over time.
Okay, well, thank you. Okay,
well,
go ahead.
Grayson, if the speed of light doesn't change, yet the matter was able to move trillions of times faster than the speed of light, if it came from a small space into, you know, the whole universe. And if the laws don't change, then energy cannot be created or destroyed. It's only change. So one of the two, energy or matter, has to be created, but they can't change. So it can't be created or destroyed. That's a law. But that one must have changed at the beginning. And what about everything falling apart? You're claiming that everything's getting better. Everything falls apart with time. Did those laws change?
Yeah. So again, the Big Bang doesn't say that the energy is created out of nothing. It actually just doesn't address the origin of the energy, because that's not what it sets out to do. The Big Bang is just describing the evolution of the universe from a smaller, hotter, denser state to the state now. And no, I did not just use evolution in the terms of the theory of evolution, just the colloquial definition for anything that changes over time at all, which is not the same meaning of the word as it's used in the theory of evolution. Mm-hmm. The second thing that Kent had said was about how speed of light changing. The actual right? The speed of light in a vacuum, that never changes. Nothing can move through space at faster than that speed. Matter is not moving through space at faster than the speed of light in the Big Bang. This is just Kent misunderstanding what the theory shows. The theory is showing that the actual metric of space-time is expanding between these objects. That means these objects are not moving through space faster than the speed of light. These objects are getting farther apart from each other because the actual amount of space in between them is expanding faster than the speed of light. There's no speed limit for the expansion of space-time because the limit is about moving through space-time. Objects cannot move through space-time faster than light, and they don't.
Wow. I'm going to use that one next time a cop pulls me over. Sir, I was not exceeding the speed limit. The distance between Repton was increasing faster than that. I wasn't feeding, officer. I'm going to use that one, and I'll blame you, Grayson.
Well, hey, if you had empirical evidence that supported that, then the officer would let you go. But you don't. And I do have empirical evidence showing that space-time has been expanding. So the officer would let me go.
Okay.
If you do get out of that ticket, Kent, you better thank Grayson for that. So,
okay.
Guys, we're going to do one last question. So that one was for you, Grayson. We got one for you, Kent. Then it's even in terms of questions. And we're going to wrap things up. This has definitely been one of your better debates out of the many that you guys have done together. Mark Reed, he's got one for you now, Kent. So his question is this: how did God produce everything, the specific process? If you can't explain that, then why doesn't Grayson win?
I do not know how God created everything. I don't know how God exists outside of time, space, matter. I've admitted for years and all along, I believe by faith, God did it. He will not admit that he believes by faith. There was a small space, I'll call it a dot, smaller than an atom that contained everything. All the cows in the universe that are now in the universe today, all the cows in the world were in that dot. All the elephants, everything, all the Himalaya mountains. He will never admit that's a statement of faith to say the universe grew from smaller than a single atom to bigger than a galaxy. He'll never admit that's a faith. I admit, Mark, mine's a faith. Do you believe by faith that all the matter in the universe fit in a dot? I'm sorry, a dot. Smaller than an atom? You have to take that by faith. See, the reason he won't admit it's by faith and a religion, then they lose their tax funding. They, like all of us, paying for their religion to be taught. That's why they'll never admit it. Go ahead.
Okay, so no, Kent, the reason why I accept these scientific theories is because they have empirical evidence to support them. Right. If they didn't, I would reject it. We know that the universe had a Big Bang because we have the cosmic microwave background that shows us that it was once in a hotter, smaller, denser space. That's just an observable fact. There's no faith required for that. So yeah, you were the one saying that unless your worldview can explain everything, then it's incomplete. Well, guess what? You just admitted you have an incomplete worldview. I don't think that your logic holds up now, because I don't think germ theory is incomplete because it doesn't explain the origin of the universe. You still haven't been able to address that point. And I remembered what I was going to say earlier, so I'll just make that my last point, is that you absolutely, Kent, if you had the political power to change this nation's curriculum, you absolutely would want young earth creationism taught to students. Like, what are you talking about? The only reason you say that you don't advocate for getting it taught to students is because you know you don't have the political power to make that happen. But if you did, there's no doubt in my mind you'd get evolution out of school and you'd get young earth creationism in. I mean, do we even have to pretend that to deny that?
Yes, I would not do that. I've written extensively on that topic.
You have a DVD series about how to teach creationism in public schools. A whole DVD series about it.
It's okay. It's never been wrong against the law to teach creation in public schools.
You just denied that that's what you want to do. And now you're admitting you have a DVD series about it.
I have said hundreds of times, we should get the lies out of the textbooks. It's the lies I'm concerned about. The embryo does not have gill slits, Grayson. Get that out of the textbook. There's lots of—
This is just a deflection, man.
No, it's not.
You know you would want to get it taught to kids. Like, I mean—
Oh, I do teach it to kids. Lots of kids come through here. We had a bunch here today. I'm in a bunch here tomorrow, too. And kids are coming for Thanksgiving. I'm going to teach creation to every kid we can. We go through our charts and teach them how stupid evolution is. I'm going to keep doing that, okay, for until I die.
And you really believe that Dinosaur Adventureland is going to last beyond you? Like, I mean, Matt Powell's not taking that forward. Eric's not taking that forward. No, who's going to take Dinosaur Adventureland on after you? Nick?
No, I'm going to live right till the end. I'm going to live until the rapture, so.
Okay. Hey, well, that's not a very good retirement plan, but I'll let you have it.
I'll be 72 in January. I don't intend to retire. I'm going to retread. Keep rolling. You watch.
I'm going to make dying the last thing I do, gentlemen.
That's right.
So, Grayson, Kent, excellent debate. Very engaging, stimulating, fast paced, basically all discussion, all back and forth discussion, little mix of both cross exam and free flowing discussion with some opening statements. And as always, a fun audience Q&A. So let's get some real quick final words, final thoughts as we close it down for tonight. Grayson Hawk, Dr. Dino, the six stages of evolution. So appreciate you guys doing this. Grayson, final words, final thoughts for tonight?
Yeah, I mean, Dinosaur Adventure Land is a cult, man. I don't know. I didn't feel personally like I was in danger by being there, but I'm also like a straight man. If I was gay or trans, I don't really know what would have happened to me at Dinosaur Adventure Land, because I mean, Kent's religious text and Kent advocates that
guys, back, Grayson,